Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Originally founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chum, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community.
This is Season 14 of the White Book Podcast.
Props and Slops, episode 513. You know them, you love them, my co-hosts, Aaron and Roy.
You love us?
They definitely know us at this point.
I mean,
and does, Glazer.
Does Sam love us?
Sam does love us, but Glazer, we definitely have known this. We've been doing, let's see, you've done this for more than half a decade now.
Jeez.
You are the second White Book host, Glazer.
Thank you. Hey.
People love you.
While most of our listeners don't care, I just opened the 1602 Mr. Fantastic.
Oh, the sword one?
Yeah, the sword one. It's a really good one.
It's probably the only good Mr. Fantastic brand.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy. This has been like hotness in terms of opening. Variant.
Yeah,
I now close Snap. I'm not going to play while we record. I just knew I had to play one four cross card and I got a variant. So I played one four cross card. I got a one cube game that I should have snapped on.
What was the four cost card you played?
Spider-Man.
Okay.
Spider-Man.
So I play Professor Spider-Man. X on four and then Spider-Man on five with the current deck I'm playing.
Does all that a spider can.
Spoiler, that wins a lot of games.
I bet.
Like, you can't play cards, and then you really can't play cards. It's a pretty good combo.
Well, in that case, if we're not snapping, then maybe we're moving on to Ted Lasso? I tried to think of a good, you know, like, sports transition there, but we would have needed U.S. football to really use a snap transition, so... It's the best I got.
Funny.
So this is my favorite episode of the season so far by a lot.
Talking about the fourth or the third?
I don't remember what happens in the third specifically. The first three sort of jumbled together in my brain. The fourth is the most recent I watched. I watched it after Iceland. Yeah. So it sticks out. I also like the first meeting with Nate. I like that they didn't just make him a villain. He's still conflicted.
Oh, yeah. He's still Nate. It's just kind of... I guess the point is Nate keeps consistently choosing the worst possible option in any situation.
Well, it's his father figure, right? Like, it's his father is fairly toxic to him. And then, so he doesn't... Like, he respects Ted as a father figure until Ted doesn't pay enough attention to him. Which feels like his own father, and then there's another toxic father figure who's giving him the type of attention he thinks he wants. Like, I think I really like all of that. I really like the backfiring of the video. I like basically everything.
Oh, yeah.
I really, really, really enjoyed the episode.
That was pretty obvious where the backfiring of the video was going to go, but I actually think I liked three better. That would have been the first night out, like the soft open at Sam's restaurant. Zava joining the team.
Yeah, that was what the third episode was about, Aaron. Was Zava joining the team.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which,
and that was also a very good episode.
Zava is amazing and a very interesting take on a, like, ego player, like, that feels different from season one Jamie. And I didn't realize till the internet pointed it out to me that the guy playing Zava. I already know and love from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where he played a just like a bit character, got a couple lines here and there, but he was just one of the like red shirts that they kept bringing back over and over until eventually they named him like three seasons later. So I thought that was very interesting to see him getting a much larger role than that.
Yeah, I've been impressed that Zava is a bit more complicated of a character than I was expecting him to be. He's not like straightforwardly a villain. He's also not straightforwardly like a heroic figure to save them. I thought he was used really well in the fourth episode. I think the characterization of Nate is really interesting, but where I think that this episode shows is like, I actually just do believe that Nate is kind of a fundamentally bad person, because
I think I'm fine with that, but
which is fine, which I think is fine, but I think it's kind of like maybe different than the impression that was kind of left at the end of the second season. Cause like he feels guilty, but every time when like he's put in a situation like that's like stressful, his inclination is always to do like the wrong thing.
Right.
Like it's not like he wants to do the right thing, but he screws it up or his trauma gets in the way. Like you could think about like Roy or Jamie, right? Jamie's a great example of this, right? Mm-hmm. Like Jamie did a bunch of bad things in the first season and a half, but like fundamentally, like he was oriented towards like wanting to be good. Nate's not that way, right? Like you see that really like when they destroy them at the end of the game, right? Instead of like immediately going to like shake Ted's hand, he just like runs off of the field in pure excitement, right? That he beat Ted. Like
I mostly agree with you, though I do think some of those, particularly that item, I definitely caught like a fear motivation. He, or possibly shame or a combination. Like he couldn't face Ted and that's why he ran.
I didn't get that impression, because to me at least the actor was presenting like a legitimate excitement that he had done it. Like not like I'm afraid of, like there was a little bit of fear that earlier in the episode, but I think at that moment it was like, I did what I wanted. I humiliated Ted. I beat him.
Interesting. Yeah.
And then he feels guilty about it. That's like afterwards.
But the motivation is pride of parent figure.
Yeah,
no, like consistent. Totally. Right? Like it's not I'm doing the wrong thing. I don't think it's I'm doing the wrong thing. Well, the show is about fathers and sons. We had that conversation last week. But or 2 weeks, whatever. Whenever the whole last time we did this is
2 weeks.
But like I don't think the motivation is that he intrinsically does the bad thing. It's he intrinsically tries to please the wrong people.
That's fair.
I think that's an important distinction.
Sort of. I mean, I don't know. When we did this rewatch recently, and I could start seeing the seeds of this stuff earlier, like when he berates the team in season one, and first watch, you know, it's played as kind of this triumphant Nate coming out of his shell, but I don't know. It takes much darker tones later, and I'm not sure that type of behavior from Nate is him trying to get approval from the wrong figure. I mean, like,
no, at that it's point, him mimic- at best, it's him.
I don't know.
It's him mimicking those figures. He's behaving the way he was taught to behave to people who are weak, and he's acting out on people like the way he picks on, I want to say Colin is his name. Is Colin the one he's always
Nate?
He does pick on the Irish guy, and the new Kit Boy, Will.
And the new Kit Boy. Right. So
Will is the name of the
kid. So it's that in following these toxic father figures, he takes on the same traits, is I think the what's being presented. It's not like how I've read it is that like he's kind of an asshole, right? Like, I'm not saying that he doesn't bear responsibility. And I don't think the show is arguing he doesn't bear responsibility, but he treats people he considers weak the way people treated him when they considered him weak.
You're entirely correct.
Yeah.
Which is how his father treats him. Again, like, I think that's just the character.
No, I think you're right.
Also, though, you mentioned Colin, and I do just want to throw out there on this rewatch in season two, when Keely is first explaining banter to them and she's trying to like spell it out, Colin, like in the background, you kind of hear him. He's the one player that's not confused about the spelling and goes, oh, like grinder. And I said to Kristen, oh, shit, wait a minute. Is Colin gay? And they're just like, I don't know, not making like a big deal out of it. And then now here in the fourth episode, we have confirmation. And I was like, yeah, Man.
They confirmed that in the second episode, didn't they? Third episode?
Whatever episode.
I don't know. Whichever one opened with him and his boyfriend. Yeah.
I think it's the third episode, actually.
Okay.
Because the third episode ends with the reporter seeing
them kiss.
Them making out.
Oh, yeah.
Which I wonder if they're going to. Do you think the reporter's going to do the right thing or the wrong thing when it comes to that?
I think the right thing. I think it'd be a real waste of kind of the understanding that Trent and Roy came to in what, episode 2, where they both kind of admitted they'd been shitty in the past and had kind of tried to be better than that. And like specifically that was about Trent tearing people down in his articles. Like, I don't think he would do that now.
So Trent has to get betrayed at some point and get bitter toward the team and do something tell-all-y based on it. Like, we're waiting for it. It hasn't happened yet, but like his redemption is too clean. So Ted or somebody has to do something that he feels is a fundamental betrayal. And then he's going to spill serious tea and cause lots of trouble because we need extra drama.
I think it's going to be Rebecca.
Sure. I don't really care who. I'm just overarching plot and the way things are, you know, shaping.
Sure.
Yeah. She's going to fire Ted.
Okay.
Wow.
Because what's so interesting
and,
is like,
and you think that
Ted isn't actually doing a lot of coaching in this season. That could be it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But then he's not going to like eat the team alive. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't fit.
Yeah. But agreed that he's not been doing a lot of coaching this season. I mean, he's always been fairly hands off with like strategy and stuff, but he feels outright checked out this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is weird.
But yeah.
I mean, it's realistic from where the character is, but it's sort of like weird to watch like as a drama where like your main character kind of like does nothing for most of the episodes. It's weird.
It's almost like CW.
Ted Lasso is weird vibes for me. Like, that's how I feel every time the episodes end. It's kind of weird vibes. It's weird to go straight from The Mandalorian into Ted Lasso. It's very emotional ping pong.
Yeah.
But. Okay.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. There's 12 episodes in the season. So.
Oh, are there? That's so good. Nice. I had no idea.
Well, and they're all so much longer, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also, before we leave Ted, though, there was one other item we started to hit on, and I shut down that conversation, so we'd actually start recording. Ted and his ex, whose name I now forget, were all on board that they cannot like get back together, right? That just they're ruins not. This whole arc.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. They're not like there's just no way, like storytelling wise, that makes any sense. They'll almost get back together, but they're not.
Yeah, I mean, like I have less faith in Glazer that like things will make storytelling sense, but I also probably don't think they will. I just thought there was this again, like. The note that episode ended on was kind of strange. Like it, I wasn't quite sure how to interpret Ted and his ex-wife sort of like conversation, which felt weirdly one-sided for how kind of like important for the future of them as parents.
Yeah.
Was like, it was just a strike. I mean, was expecting like him being just like, I'm going to tell you all my feelings about this. Bye. Was weird. It was just like, I was expecting him to have like a conversation, not Ted just like dumping on her quite reasonably. Like all the things Ted was saying was very reasonably, and it was like appropriately expressed emotionally, but like the therapy talk was real, but it was just weird. It was just a weird note.
So,
I mean, I can
so
see
we don't know.
Keep going.
The point of the conversation wasn't realism, right? Like structurally, the point of the conversation was that it was like we don't know where it's going. I mean, I'm convinced they're not getting back together just for the overall arc of the show, but we don't know what the result of that conversation or its purpose is. It's meant to operate as a cliffhanger, right?
Well, no.
Like I mean, if we were clear Yeah. If we were clear on what it meant, then it wouldn't be effective at making us watch the next episode to see what happens, right? Like, to see, like, what it meant. Like, I don't think the show expects us to think Ted and his ex are getting back together. Melissa is her name, I believe, actually. Because she's never been a real character in the show, right? She's a force, not a character. Sure. I don't see it happening because, like, Michelle, you're right. If it ends up happening, he'll end up with a character, not a force. I think that's, like, base 101 storytelling. But also, because the show isn't really asking us to believe they're going to get back together, it's asking us, what did this conversation mean? Tune in next week to see.
I definitely can see where you're coming from here. But where I disagree is I think the purpose of this and why I think what Ted was saying was very successful was I think the point of the conversation was like the whole thing that they were setting up all episode, which is like you actually have to confront the real source of your problem. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And the real source of Ted's problem was not soccer. It was, what his ex-wife had done and his feelings about it. Right. And I felt unsatisfied and not in a, I want to tune in to see what happens next way, but I felt sort of emotionally unsatisfied with something that could have been, I think, a really interesting, like back and forth with about him with his ex-wife about her new relationship and what that means for them. That what I think would have fit the theme of the episode really well versus the kind of like, again, I felt just awkward. Yeah, you're right that it's a cliffhanger, but just like this awkward cliffhanger where I think the episode didn't need any more cliffhangers because there's tons of stuff driving you to watch the next episodes, right? Because they lost to Nate.
Especially for anybody invested here, a third of the way through season 3.
Yeah, but I mean, just like there's a lot of internal logic. There's like, what is Rebecca going to do about Ted, right? Like that Ted has repeatedly not listened to her this season and failed her. She's like, he has repeatedly failed her throughout the season. Like, what is she going to do about it? Like, I think there's just like a lot of internal things that were pushing you to stay engaged in the story. And it was just weird that this, which I thought was going to be sort of like a big moment for the Ted sort of in his ex-wife storyline to just kind of end on a bleh.
Yeah.
It was weird. Speaking, it just felt emotionally unsatisfied and not in like, I want to watch more, in a more like that just didn't land.
You know, speaking of that, you make me think more about Rebecca and Ted, quote, failing her, end quote. And that just makes me think more, in some ways it feels like Rebecca has regressed some in her, dealing with her breakup with Rupert. And she's become very single-minded this season, rather than destroying the team like she was in the first season. She's become equally single-minded in must beat Rupert now. And it feels, I don't know, feels like kind of a backwards motion for her. And I wonder, like, kind of structurally here, if we're getting Ted kind of trying to more directly deal with this stuff, if Rebecca is going to in some way. I don't know. I guess the moment to do that maybe would have been saying something to Bex about Rupert's behavior, but I got the impression that Bex knew about it and was not happy.
Yeah, I think they are purposefully having Rebecca, like, part of her character arc is that she regresses in this season because of the sort of like shock of what Rupert did and the way it like reorients. She felt that she had gotten over from the first season into the second season, she got over those issues, but Rupert coming back with West Ham in such an aggressive way, like, kind of just disoriented her and caused her to regress. But I think while she has regressed, it's not just replaying the first season storyline. It's now like, she's the biggest, like, she wants to be the cutting edge, soccer manager or soccer owner, I guess it's not manager.
Yeah, Ted's the manager.
Yeah, it's like a different way of doing a similar storyline to that feels, to me at least, like like a natural, like a, like, and rather than just like the writers running out of ideas for Rebecca and falling back on the same tropes they use for her, it feels like an appropriate regression for the character.
So I worry that that might be done. Her seeing Rupert cheating was like a reminder of how far she's come and why she left, and why, like, while she still wants to beat him and hates him, it's not really about soccer. It's about him being a piece of shit. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, you know how they resolved the Sam thing, not the Sam Rebecca thing, the Sam, like, refusing to wear the oil company thing really abruptly.
Yeah.
I think this might be that kind of resolution where it's like this was a subplot, not the plot.
Sure.
I would like I mean, but so her response to him cheating felt like her reclaiming her growth.
That's fair. That seems right. I kind of see that. That seems right. Yeah, that seems reasonable.
I don't like the Keeley story this season at all. It's the only thing that's not working for me.
It's, yeah, yeah. It feels a little
just feels like it belongs on a different show now.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I don't care about her friend. I don't, her business has given me no reason. Like, it's so vague as to, like, not really be doing anything. Like, it's a different show that needs more developing. And, like, right now, it's like, I sort of care because I like Keeley a lot, but, like,
so where I see the Keeley thing, because I think this season is like a lot about foils, mm-hmm. right? You know, like Rupert is a foil for Rebecca, and Nate is a foil for Ted. And so I think...
And Jamie and
Zaba. What's his face? Zaba, right? Mm-hmm. And Keeley's is her friend, right? Because like you see that in the banter thing, right? Where she, you know, is kind of like... And I'm... That, I think, kind of makes a certain amount of sense for me, and I can sort of, like, see what, like, I'm kind of interested to see, like, how Keeley resolves her conflict with, like, what her foil, like, means for her, and, like, where her character goes. I'm, like, getting red flags, actually, from, and, like, I'm a little worried about, like, where this storyline with the venture capitalist is.
Yeah.
Like, I got very, I mean, we're gonna see what happens. Like, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see.
I've gotten very mixed reads from different people watching that episode, where some folks think the venture capitalist is like about to crack down, yank her funding, whatever. And some other people are like, no, I think they're trying to work some kind of like awkward sexual chemistry between them. I don't.
Yep.
Yeah. It's been very different reads from different people.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. We'll see where that goes.
I think we've covered Ted for long enough.
Yeah, yeah, longer than I expected. So in that case, let's set the sun on Ted Lasso and move on to the new Netflix Luther film, which I think, do I remember correctly, ages ago that you also watched Luther, Roy?
No.
Oh, okay. Man, maybe I was
Luther's like a little too serious for me.
Okay. It's a
genre I like, but it's like a little too serious. It's kind of like that the Gillian Anderson show that's set in like Northern Ireland, where that's like the serial killer is like the co-protagonist.
Oh, I have not watched that one.
Yeah, that like that show, like, it theoretically would be something I like, but I tried watching it. And it just was too much for me. Luther was the same way.
Okay. Yeah. Well, for any listeners that may not have seen it, it's a BBC cop show starring Andrew Seblo, who's, you know, fantastic, you know, charismatic, all that jazz. And it came out in a kind of similar time period to the Cumberbatch Sherlock. So I used to describe it to other people as, well, it's a cop show, and it's a little bit like the new Sherlock, but imagine that Moriarty was also his Watson, his kind of companion and figure he was bouncing ideas off of. So that kind of jives with Roy's reaction to it. But I've always enjoyed it. And I admit, I didn't look up hard dates on this, but it got like three or four seasons. And ended in a pretty similar time period to the Cumberbatch Sherlock stuff. So that means we haven't seen anything from or about Luther in like a decade. And then suddenly I saw that Netflix is bringing out a new movie that was a sequel, which kind of blew my mind, considering Luther went to jail for his playing fast and loose with the law. So wondered where this was going to go. And yeah, sorry for the spoiler alerts, people, but this goes to like full on prison breakout so that he can chase down a serial killer. Played
as you do.
Yeah, exactly. Played by crap, why'd my brain shut down? The guy that played Gollum. Andy Serkis.
Gollum.
Yeah.
No, Gollum.
Played by Andy Serkis, who they seem to have made up to be, as best I can guess, is if Andy Serkis was attending a convention and decided to dress up and cosplay Martin Short, that's what he looks like in this film, which is amazing. Yeah, but overall it's pretty good, aside from the kind of whole like logic bomb issue of like what happened. Like Luther is already a disgraced cop who got thrown in jail, and now he's broken out. Like he's only digging himself deeper and deeper. Like surely this is like the capstone, and then Luther is gonna like die saving one last person or something, right? Nope, that's not it. I think Netflix might be planning on doing more of these, because it ends with a government offer, a mysterious government offer. So they're keeping that door open just in case, but I had fun with it.
Yeah, I've heard good things. So if you like Luther, you should watch it.
Okay, what's next?
Looks like we're on to Mando. E5.
And four.
Oh, and four.
Which was four? Help me.
Yeah, Mandalorian blurs together.
So four was was it so, the, like, it's so, scientist? So four was rescuing the boy. Five is
Lizzo or Jack Black.
Right. No, that's six.
That's six? Oh,
so,
wait.
Yeah.
So we've also got six to talk about then.
No, we talked about four.
Okay.
So
okay.
Five is about the pirate. So the pirate that's attacking.
Oh, I hated that episode.
Apollo Creed's.
Yeah.
Planet, and then six is the Lizzo episode.
Okay, gotcha.
Jack Black, my favorite episode of Mandalorian of all time,
because it had Doc Brown.
It just like as soon as they got off that subway car, it just never stopped. It was amazing. Like if every single Mandalorian episode is as batshit nuts as that episode was for the middle, I will love the show until it goes off the air. Like it took absolutely none of the things that were happening seriously.
Which episode?
We're talking about the
six,
the
with the droids.
Oh yeah. Oh, I'm all in on six. Six was fantastic.
It just didn't take itself seriously. It had so many references to the rest of the Star Wars fandom. It had Christopher Lloyd playing as a revanchist neo-Confederate that said Count Dooku was right. Like, I was laughing hysterically. Wait,
like,
the whole episode.
Okay, legit, I enjoyed most of that episode, and the plot was super fun. But can I legit ask, because I feel like he got killed or taken away or whatever, like, before he could finish his monologue. What, like, logically speaking here, was his actual plan? I could not make heads or tails of that.
Well, because his plan was like all of those like Nors that ends with, oh, wait, this guy was some like Nazi dude is actually running things. It wasn't a plan. It was to restore the Confederacy of independent systems. Right. Like he's a neo-Confederate in the literal, like in the thematic sense, he's a neo-Confederate. But he's also literally a neo-Confederate in that he is the last supporter of the Confederacy of independent systems from Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. He literally says Count Dooku was right and was murdered by Jedi. It was like, Oh my god.
Yeah.
Mounted by Jedi agents. It's just like, this is amazing. Like, A plus Dave Filoni.
It was interesting to see that.
Tied it was together. So fucking funny. So funny. Like, it was like so, so funny.
Although it was also interesting, like a little mind blowing to me to stop and go, oh yeah, you know, I guess there probably still would be some people alive that were like supporters of the Separatists.
They talk about it.
Like, holy crap. Andor. I hadn't thought about that.
They talk about it.
Oh yeah, in Andor, because there some of them make up some of the early rebellion.
So you like the Glazer? I was 50-50 on whether or not you'd like this episode.
No, I really liked it. I didn't care about the, like, they seem to do a lot of and like part of it's Boba Fett, like that it's almost like a Wild West story, right?
Yeah.
For episode 5, and like they've done it like 4 times now, I feel like, and like I get it, I'm over it. So that episode bored the absolute shit out of me. There was too much like build up of like, who's gonna save this town, and it's like, can you just bring the fucking Mandalorians who are obviously coming already?
They already did that as best they could in, what was that, season 2 with what's his face, Timothy
Oliphant. Boba Fett shows up. Oh, Timothy Oliphant, yeah. Also Boba Fett when he saves.
Yeah. So like, this is the third time they've done it. I just don't need it. I don't care. Like, I'm done. The other episode was so okay. I don't love that if they're doing, like, if Roy's read on the allegory is right, that the answer seems to be like, maybe we should just compromise with the extremists. Is not my favorite take, but if you ignore it and just go, Star Wars is fun, like the buddy cop of Bo-Katan and Mando going to hunt with amazingly stupid over-the-top characters was just dumb fun. And like, Christopher Lloyd, the second you saw him, you knew he had to be important, because you're not hiring Christopher Lloyd to have him be in one scene and a background character, right? Like, it was fun. I just had fun with it. Like, I don't like Mandalorian this season as much. So season 2 is a really high for me.
Yeah.
And like, I don't like it nearly as much, but this kind of episode, this is like easily my favorite episode of the season. Partially because I think it's the only episode of the season I actually really like.
Yeah.
Well, I think, this was basically just like Chinatown in Star Wars, right? You get that. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. It was just a noir, like, and with the Mando playing the racist cop / private detective, like, just punching robots for no reason, like, was just making me laugh. When he just starts beating on the robots, I'm like, well, one, it fits his character, because he does hate robots.
I was going to say, it's not no reason. He has that established.
Well, just because a group is mean to you doesn't give you the right to just beat the shit out of them, like... And that he's just beating up robots, like, and it's just amazing. It's like, amazing. The episode was just great.
I've got a question for you guys.
The CSI?
Aaron kind of like hinted at with the casting of Christopher Lloyd. I'm curious how you guys feel about, at this point, what is just like the cavalcade of cameos. To briefly lay that out there, like, I don't mind, you know, like the one Bill Burr thing. What's his face? The guy from Bill Burr's been crowd. Like a
bunch of episodes.
Right. But I mean, as a character, like introducing a character played by that person, or like Richard Ayoade as the voice of a droid was fantastic. But I feel like it's getting to the point with these that they're kind of tearing me out of trying to just immerse myself in Star Wars and just turn my brain off, because I just look at it and go, oh, look, that's Jack Black, not whatever character he's playing. Or, oh, look, that's Tim Meadows, better known as the ladies man, talking basically in his ladies man voice.
I don't think Tim Meadows was supposed to be like, oh, that's Tim Meadows.
So Star Wars,
that's what happened to me.
So Star Wars is A, stupid and campy always, and B, basically just the Muppets in space. So like, they're just doing the Muppets in space.
They need more Muppets
at this point. And they're just doing pastiches of different genres. And like, I always like noir. Like, I'm a really big noir fan, which explains why I like this episode so much, right? And B, like, dude, you're gonna do a bunch of pastiches and Muppets in space with a bunch of silly guest stars. You know what? Star Wars is stupid. And when they try and make good, serious Star Wars, you know what happens?
You get The Last Jedi.
The Rise of the Skywalker happens. So if that's what's going to happen, then just like be stupid and campy. Be basically like, look, they're Muppets. Like, did you know that we can... Did you know that we can have Ozzy Osbourne interact with the Muppets? Did you know we can have fucking Jack Black interact with the Mando?
You're selling me on Sesame Street right now.
All
right.
Look, first off.
Which is great. I love Sesame Street.
The world needed a puppeteer yeeting Baby Yoda episode. Like, I don't understand, like, why anyone would be opposed to that. Like, literally throwing the puppet at Lizzo was like honest to goodness. I didn't think anything would top Megan Thee Stallion twerking with She-Hulk, but I actually think yeeting Baby Yoda at Lizzo does top that. Like, it was like, I didn't realize I needed that in my life, but it's up there. I mean, Disney, like, I know everybody's like down on Marvel, down on Disney right now, but Disney has provided a lot of great things for me this year. Lizzo and Baby Yoda, Matt Murdock's Walk of Shame, Megan Thee Stallion twerking with She-Hulk. These are all amazing cultural moments that when I am at my darkest moment, I will think about, and it will bring me pure joy. Like, I don't like the people who are like Lizzo. It's like, shouldn't be in the, it's like, do you know who would have signed off on this episode if he was still in charge of Star Wars? George Lucas. This was the most George Lucas's shit in the whole world. Like, it didn't make any sense. But it drew heavily on the lore that was previously established. Nothing was acting like it was supposed to be. Why do droids have blood? Why are there droid bars?
That was...
Who knows? Who cares? Just like, go with it. And if you go with it, you're going to have a lot of fun. If you start rambling about how, you know, this violated this, it's just like, no, bro. No. But is this the moment to sort of talk briefly about the big Star Wars announcements?
Ooh, yeah, I guess we could. I'm surprised we didn't throw that on the chart.
I don't even know what they are.
The big one is Ahsoka is coming out this year.
Oh, that okay.
And it's very Thrawny. They literally say
everything. Rebel Z in general.
Yeah, Sabine looks cool. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is playing Hera, for those of you who, you know, that's important. There's Dark Jedi, possibly. Phrase
Titus Pullo, right?
Yeah. Yep. They literally use the phrase heir to the Empire in the trailer, which is just like very, it both hits me in the like nostalgia button and very triggering for me. So yeah, it's great.
You can't give me the phrase heir to the Empire and not friggin' give me Mara Jade.
Well, oh God, that's a door that should stay closed. Like, we don't. Disney doesn't deserve Mara. She's too good for Disney. But we'll see. So it's gonna be interesting. I'm excited. It's probably the third most excited thing I am for a Disney property this year, behind Secret Invasion and the Marvels. So it's pretty exciting. And then they announced that there is a Mando movie coming.
Mandoverse, to like cap off the Mandoverse, right?
Well, they repeatedly are saying it's not capping off, so
they did coin the phrase Mandoverse, didn't they?
Yes, the Mandoverse, but it's going to be New Republic versus the Imperial Remnant. How that fits in with the timeline J.J. Abrams established in The Force Awakens, who knows? Who cares? Whatever. Like, the less we think about The Force Awakens timeline and its political status, the better. We're getting a Rey movie. That's set after Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, God, no.
Yes. Yes. I want Rey. Give me Jedi Master Rey. Yes, yes, yes. Not with J.J. Abrams. Oh, well,
You know what I will not be doing? Seeing that.
Well, your loss, my gain.
I'm sure.
And then there's a High Republic movie coming. I think that's going to be the first one. It's going to go, I think it's going to go High Republic, Dave Filoni, Mandoverse movie, and then the Rey movie. The Rey movie might be first. It's either first or last. But I know the Mando one is going to be
the thing we know is it's not the middle.
Yes, it's not the middle one. Mandoverse is the middle one. So three Star Wars movies. And Acolyte is coming beginning of next year.
Yeah. Which is also High Republic, right?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, Darth Bane era. It might have Darth Bane in it. So,
oh, he is one of that's old Republic era.
Well, but like High Republic, it's that's called the High Republic. Anything that is pre the prequels is the High Republic.
No, they put out a new
timeline.
Uh huh. Yeah, and there is a period straight up called the Old Republic.
All right, let's take a look. Let's see what Polygon says.
Are there Knights of the Old Republic?
Okay, so
I hope so.
Oh my God. Okay, so there's Dawn of the Jedi now, the Old Republic, the High Republic, Fall of the Jedi, Reign of the Empire, Age of Rebellion, the New Republic, Rise of the First Order, and then, oh no, you didn't. You reused, Disney.
They even reused the logo.
They did. Oh my God. Oh, Disney. This is like, God, they crunched me. It's like, I feel like Darth Vader crunched my chest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, cause that's literally what they said Rey's doing in her new film, right?
I know.
It's about her founding the new Jedi Order.
Oh, I know. I'll eat that shit up, but also I'll do so with a pain in my heart. The old canon. Anyway, lots of Star Wars exciting stuff. Like, there's a lot of energy in Star Wars right now. And we're getting another season of Andor. Like, I think Andor, next season of Andor is, I think, end of next year.
What about Butt?
So, what?
Get it? Andor Butt.
Oh, I thought you liked Andor, so I wasn't expecting you to make a joke about it. So
I need to actually sit and finish Andor. My wife hated Andor, so I never got far.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, I'm sorry, Carla didn't like Andor.
That's fine.
Anyway, we're getting end of next year is the new season of Andor. So exciting times for Star Wars fans.
Yeah.
All right, what's next on the list?
What's next? Oh, back to me. Aurora Tea Garden. I don't know if anybody
made that up.
Even heard of these movies? No. Okay, just checking. So they are Hallmark movies. And there's at least a dozen of them. They are cozy mysteries.
No, Will, these are not Candace Cameron.
Uh-huh.
Oh, Will.
Yeah, yep.
Will.
We've started watching them.
Will.
Good Lord, there's so many of these. There's so many. We were watching the third one earlier before starting podcasting, and they're not great, but they're kind of cheesy, campy in their own way. And, you know,
they're not worth watching.
Yeah. I'm gradually getting Kristen to move on from, you know, the Hallmark romance films to now cozy mysteries. Hallmark
mystery films.
Yeah. Okay. And then we'll move on to something from there. But, it's interesting. There are, I think, two highlights that I would give it at the moment. One, I now know what Lexa Doig, if I'm pronouncing her last name correctly, is doing with her life. If anybody else knows who that is.
Just made that name up.
Is this the woman from Andromeda?
Yes. Yeah, it's Rami herself.
Jesus, there's so much deep... Well, yeah. You are lost in the sauce, man. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I think it's been established in Props and Slops that I have a really low bar for garbage that I watch. Like, I watch a lot of garbage.
It's true.
Like, a lot. I enjoy garbage. I find it very mentally, like fulfilling. Like, it fills my soul. But this is too much for me. Like, this is too... First off, it's the one of the worst actors currently operating, like, as just like a human being, which is Candace Cameron Bure. Like, she's just like, Hallmark is too liberal for her.
That is true. She's now at what is it, Great American Films,
whatever. OANN for your grandpa. Like, Hallmark, the Hallmark channel is like, she's the worst. All right, she's like the J.K. Rowling of trash television shows. Like, I just can't, Will. Like, I truly can't. This is truly lost in the sauce. Love you to death, but...
Well, them's the break.
David Ingram? Oh, my God.
I will at least point out the one other thing that I find terribly amusing so far here.
a major plot point of the first film is this big, like, Victorian mansion that she kind of unexpectedly inherits. So she moves out of her duplex into, probably a townhouse rather, out of her townhouse into this Victorian home that she inherited. Film two, she is back in the duplex. There is absolutely no explanation, no mention of the house she inherited, nothing. But everything else, story-wise, characters and whatever, continues forward, and they do reference the first one. They're not completely ignoring that the first film happened, just that she inherited a house. So
that's right, and these books were written by the Suki Sak. Oh, let's move on.
That's who wrote them? I didn't even know that.
you got me down on Wikipedia. Oh. Well, I'm going to turn this off. We're going to move on to the movie Glazer just got back from, right?
It was fan servicey and fun. Noah really liked it. The beginning, they spend way too long in the real world.
What film? We didn't mention that to the listeners.
What listeners? All right, Super Mario Bros.
Okay, keep going.
So we saw Super Mario Brothers. It was very fan servicey. They do a lot of Mario Kart stuff. Donkey Kong's in it. Luigi is served poorly, but it's very fan servicey. It's
by a Mario movie. Luigi served poorly. That's just on point.
That's not nice. I like Luigi.
I like Luigi too. But that's the whole, like, that's just great. What happens to Luigi.
Whatever. The beginning is slow. It takes way too long to get us. I mean, way too long. It's like a half hour-ish to get us into the Mushroom Kingdom, right? We get, like, once Mario and Peach meet, the rest of the movie is very fun and, like, really entertaining. It's clearly, like, a movie for seven-year-olds, but it was a solid movie for seven-year-olds.
There you go. It's making more money than Avatar.
I mean, good. Everything should do better than Avatar. Avatar sucks.
It opened bigger than Avatar. They solved it. They solved it. Just make a movie based on a beloved video game franchise that's older than most of the people alive on the planet, and you will you'll make billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So brilliant.
Probably won't go see this one in theaters. I think it's released through Paramount, right? Who's the
I don't know.
Maybe.
So I'll watch on whatever streaming program it comes to in 45 days. So, but yeah, the kids were all over the movie theater when I went to go see a movie this weekend. So they were out and about in Silver Spring to support this film. So it didn't surprise me when I saw how much money it made. I'm glad Noah enjoyed it.
Yeah.
There's no actual Chris Pratt, like the person of Chris Pratt in the movie, right?
No, there's no actual people in the movie.
Yeah. Good. It's not like the Lego movie?
No. Okay, I reiterate, there are no people in this movie. Mario himself is from the real world in the movie, and then he falls down a pipe.
Okay.
But he's CG, but he's even in
animated the whole time.
Real. Yes, he's animated the whole time.
Is Chris Pratt's Mario voice acceptable?
No, what? It's like, and they constantly do the yippee and woohoo in the background for things. Like, it's super fan servicey. Okay. He doesn't do the accent except as a joke a couple times. It's fine.
Does
it's
he say like, it's a me, Mario, at any point?
I don't remember, and I just it's left
a,
it.
It's a me, Mario, I'm gonna win. Like, there's no point of classic. Watching a Mario movie if Mario doesn't say that.
No.
So, okay, well, then this movie Roy's gets out. A slot for me. Yeah, I'm done. What's the point?
Okay. Yeah, look. No, Noah, I would not have seen this. Cool, we're good on that, right? Like, adults should probably, like, chill out with watching the Mario movie with any expectation of anything. There's, like, Punch-Out stuff in the background. At some point, Mario plays Kid Icarus.
Oh, nice.
Like the video game or, like, plays a game against the actual character?
No, plays the OG Kid Icarus at his house before he gets sucked into Mario World. But there's like Raccoon Mario, Cat Mario, et cetera, et cetera.
Yoshi?
No, but can I just spoil because it's Mario?
Sure. Yeah. Wow. Yes, please, Glazer. I could be now only appointed by Mario spoilers.
The last, there's like a hint of Yoshi earlier, and then the last end credit scenes is an egg hatching.
So the sequel will be about Yoshi. Yeah.
The sequel will be Mario and Yoshi.
That seems seems like
so,
a good plan.
So it's got no Waluigi, right?
No, no Wario, no Waluigi.
Oh yeah, saving that to be movie two, right?
And no Daisy, right? It's just
Peach.
Princess Peach is the only. Does it pass the Bechdel test?
No, because there's no other female character. That's not possible. The whole world, the only other females are like Mario's mother shows up in a couple of scenes. No, Bowser's in love with Peach. That's the whole plot.
Wait, Bowser's actually in love with Peach?
Yeah, he wants to marry her, so he's taking over the world and blowing things up because he doesn't understand why that means. There's the blue star from one of the Mario games.
Yeah.
Like the blue star is in a cage from the beginning. He's like saying really messed up, depressing shit, and it's actually wildly amusing. But it's the only like gag.
Okay. So on a scale of like, I don't know, what's a bad Mario game? I don't really know.
I don't play enough Mario games.
Mario 2?
Does it
Mario 2 is a great game. It's just not a great Mario game.
Exactly.
Does it give you Mario RPG vibes? Like Super Mario Bros.
Like, no, I don't like Mario RPG because I don't like platforming, but like Mario RPG is excellent. Like it's Mario RPG is well above and beyond this.
Okay.
Like, look, if the, in terms of like what you'd expect from a kid's Mario movie, 7-ish. Like it's clearly above passing, like 6-7. And if you're 7, it's like an 8, 8.5.
Yeah. Okay.
Look, there is genuine amusement to Mario eating random mushrooms and then turning into shit.
All right.
And like there's a giant Mario Kart fight in it, and like there's a Super Smash Brothers fight between Mario and Donkey Kong, and like there's shit like that.
Cool.
Okay. It's heavy on the fencers. It's fun.
Okay. I'll be excited to watch on Paramount Plus or whatever.
Yeah, I don't have that. So cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Did we all see Dungeons and Dragons?
I did.
I have not yet.
I thought it was fun. I'm already forgetting it, but I thought it was very fun.
I also thought it was very fun. I didn't forget it. I enjoyed it a lot. It was way better than it had any right to be. But I think it was very respectful of the source material without being beholden to it. Like
beholder to it.
There were no beholders in that movie. Spoiler. Sorry, Will. I don't want to.
I don't care.
Wait, are you saying that spoilers for the Dungeons and Dragons movie doesn't bother you, man?
go figure.
It's okay. It's a cute movie. Like that is my main takeaway. I was like, I really enjoyed this movie. It wasn't bad. It wasn't really like, oh my God, all you A24 stands out there should go right out and see it. It's going to win a bunch of awards. But it was also like really fun and enjoyable experience. It was like watching like Critical Role without the actors, like where like what Critical Role is, you know, trying to be right. Like it's very much D&D by way of Critical Role. So if you enjoy that sort of like very earnest, but very ironic at the same time, take on Dungeons and Dragons, that sort of like is the post Critical Role sort of like popular stance on D&D, you should watch it. If you are a Critical Role, even casual Critical Role viewer, listener, whatever, you should watch this movie. It also like has a lot of deep cuts from Forgotten Realms lore that I was actually really impressed. So I really enjoyed this movie. It was way better than any right to be. Dungeons and Dragons, like Forgotten Realms, Dungeons and Dragons, got an adaptation that was respectful of its source material, more so than many other adaptations of way more like serious genre.
It's more respectful of its source material than every Star Wars thing since the first Star Wars has been of its source material.
Yeah, or like more like the Divergent series, or like, you know, like a lot of these like beloved sort of YA series get adapted into movies like the Maze Runner movies or whatever, like the material isn't treated with very much respect. Well, D&D got more respect. So
okay.
But the screenwriter did write the Homecoming movie, the Spider-Man Homecoming movie. So
oh, okay.
It's John. Yeah, it's the guy who. It's the guy from Freaks and Geeks, who then was on Bones and did Homecoming.
Huh.
John Francis Daly. He was like, I think he was the main character, right? He plays the younger brother of the woman who plays Hawkeye's wife in Freaks and Geeks. Well, the actress who plays Hawkeye's wife is the main older character, and her brother is the main younger character. It's that actor is the writer-director of this movie. So I think it's John Francis Daly is his name. But anyway, good. Prop.
Proper.
I did remember something that I watched because I was in the mood for sort of bad fun movies. I watched Jurassic World, which is free on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
It is worth the money of
the first one.
This is I guess it's Dominion. It's the third one.
Oh, okay.
The one that has all of the characters in it.
Yeah.
Except for the kids. Like, I don't understand why they've never brought back the kids from the first two Jurassic Park, from the first Jurassic Park movie. Like, they're like in their 40s now. Like, I don't. Like, I've never understood, like, they keep bringing the adults back, but you would think that the kids would be a logical thing to bring back. But whatever. It's bad. It's not even really fun bad. It's just, like, a lot of fan service. But just kind of bad. Like I want to give it the benefit of the, like, the movie is, like, demand. Like, I got to the end of the movie, and I was like, this movie, I gave too much the benefit of the doubt throughout watching it. It's like, I wanted to like the movie more than it let me. That's the way to put it. So I will slop it. Because it just, like, it's just bad. And it's not even really that fun for a movie that's about, like, dinosaurs being part of the world that has, like, the original cast of Jurassic Park that is still alive besides the kids. It's a weird movie.
I never watched the second or third. I watched the first Jurassic World, and, like, that was perfect for me. That, like, capped everything off. It had exactly the level of fan service I wanted and needed. Like, I mean, it has its problems as a film, but, like, as a 11-year-old or whatever I was when the original Jurassic Park came out, like, Jurassic World was the perfect film for me, and I just stopped there. I said, you know what? I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, the original's fine. The sequel is actually worse than this movie. So first is fine. Second is abysmally bad. This one is just kind of like, I already have forgotten it, other than it has Alan Grant and Laura Dern and Jeff Goldblum. And Chris Pratt looks like, you know, like Arnold Schwarzenegger these days. So that's kind of it. Firmly mid at best. So. Anyway, what did you all read?
Well, actually, both of those are me. So one of them is the second of Sanderson's secret project books, the four that went on the Kickstarter. So this is the Frugal Wizard's Handbook for Surviving Medieval England. it is... the one that I was not terribly excited about, but I also knew I would blow through it pretty quickly. So I read it anyway, even though it is not part of the wider Cosmere that most all of his other stuff connects to. So this was a relatively short, straightforward sci-fi romp for the most part, actually. Spoiler alert here for folks, if anybody cares. I know Aaron reads some Sanderson.
I read the one series.
Okay. This does have a little bit of a neat take, I think. It's not a time travel thing. It's a multiversal travel. So this company finds other universes where progression has gone much more slowly. And so you are still in the year, you know, 2090 or whatever this takes place, but you visit vacation to a world that is still in some level of medieval era. And there's sort of more to that. Like, the book is interspersed with snippets from the company's like marketing materials and all the different packages that you can buy. And, you know, you can actually still go all the way to like Roman era Britain, all the way up to like the Renaissance. And there's a lot of other stuff. And so
it's kind of Westworld.
Yeah. 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 So it's kind of like amusing reading the humorous marketing materials and stuff. And so this guy winds up in over his head because, I'll soft play the reasons why, but he takes a vacation and is not prepared properly for it and loses his memory when he gets there. And it turns out the place he has wound up happens to be the one so far discovered universe where some type of magic is real, sort of. I mean, the stuff that is magic and the Norse gods that appear to be active in the world are probably just other like multiversal beings, but it's fun. It's a fun little romp as he gets in over his head and slowly builds a D&D party around himself, basically. So, yeah. I liked it.
Cool.
The second one, also me, ooh, The Light of the Jedi.
I just fell.
So I decided to take the dive with all this Star Wars excitement lately. I decided to take the dive into the High Republic stuff. Been curious. They're already in phase two of it. And they were like 20-ish.
They're on phase three now.
They're on phase three now? Crap.
It's ending. Well, not until 2026, but
yeah,
they're in the downsling.
Okay. Well, there's a lot for me to read to catch up on, which is kind of cool. And from what I gather, it's all actually like plotted and planned as far as the connections and the overall scope, which is refreshing to me as a Star Wars fan at this point. So yeah, started reading the very first one, Charles Soule's Light of the Jedi, who, if I remember right, he's the guy that wrote that Vader run that everybody loved a few years ago, right?
He did the second one.
Yeah.
People love Souls, but so it's
not
Kieran Gillen's.
I love Gillen.
And then Soule picked it up.
Okay. Okay. I knew he'd done Vader stuff, but obviously I mixed up what era. But it's been good. I've really enjoyed it. It sucks you in pretty quickly with, let's say, a fast pace. It was a little odd that I read, according to my Nook, the first 25%, the first, it was like 12 or 13 chapters, aside from a very short prologue chapter, all of the rest of that 25% of the book and many chapters was one long action scene. Different perspectives on the same action scene. So that was, it made me kind of question the overall pacing of the book, but it's still been enjoyable. I haven't quite finished. I'm like three quarters of the way through now, so I'll have wrapped it up by next time we record.
Cool.
All right.
So all right, Glazer, you've played video games.
I bought a book to read on the plane. I bought Mort. And then I ended up playing Xenoblade 3 instead.
Pratchett novel?
Yeah. I just want, like, so our flight ended up wildly delayed, which ended up leaving us enough time to charge our electronics, but our electronics weren't very well charged when we got to the airport. So I was like, well, I guess I'll read on the plane. And then I was at that airport forever, so I ended up having a fully charged Switch. So I played Xenoblade 3. I got, like, 5 hours in, but it feels... it plays very similar to Xenoblade 1, which is good because I hate the way Xenoblade 2 plays. There are two parties that meet up. We've only dealt with one. The basic plot is you're born into a world where fundamentally everyone is born into one of two larger tribes, and each tribe has a bunch of colonies. And they live 10 years. Almost no one makes it to the 10 years because everyone is a soldier. You're one at this point in the game, fairly elite soldier. And eventually, obviously, you're going to find out what the hell is happening, what's going on, why this is the way the world works. It's been a slow open, but I think that's my fault because I really like it plays exactly like Xenoblade 1, first of all. The main character is basically playing Shulk again, and I really enjoyed playing Shulk, so I've just been running around, screwing around with that. There's 1,000 side quests, which are handled better than Xenoblade 1, which isn't like a big challenge. Xenoblade 1's side quests are really bad. But there's just, even at the very beginning stage, there's just like a ton of shit to look through and explore. So, like, I did that. It's going to be a great game. I can tell. Like, sometimes you play a game, watch a movie, experience whatever, and as you're playing, even through the beginning, watching the beginning, experiencing the beginning, you realize that someone who's making this knows exactly what they're doing and why. And Xenoblade 3 feels exactly like that. So, like, there's no doubt that, oh my god, I forgot who makes Xenoblade. Whatever. There's no doubt Modern that, like, Soft. This... Yeah. But the creator, the guy who made... Yeah, I usually know the name, but I'm now getting really sleepy because it's been a long couple days. What the fuck is his name? Whatever.
I do not recall now.
I don't have time. Whatever. Him, he knows exactly what he's doing. And this is clearly like him pulling together a lot of the stuff that he's been building over the years. I don't know necessarily if I'm going to like it more than Xenoblade 1 because I really love Xenoblade 1 and Xenoblade 1 was novel. And as people who pay any attention know, I really prefer novel experiences. And this feels more derivative, even if it's more polished. Excuse me. Sorry, I told you I was getting tired. This feels more derivative, even if it's more polished. So I don't know if I'm going to like it more, but I know I'm really, really going to enjoy it. And I need to find time to like sit down and play. Well, now that I'm home.
Okay.
Last thing. They're remaking Persona 3.
All right. Is this actually announced or is this part of this leak that I still like? Is this off the leak?
This is not announced, but like it's now leaking from different places. So unless like there's a grand conspiracy, it's almost certainly happening.
And it's a full-on remake?
Full-on remake.
I mean, they don't have to fix too much about Persona 3, except let you control your party members.
Yeah, do a little bit to Tartarus and like.
Yeah, make Tartarus a little less tedious. But
update, and I'm sure they'll do a visual update. Look,
hey, the question is, will they make it? Will they fix some of the questionable choice around gender and sexuality, or they make it worse? Who knows?
Where's Japanese culture this week? It's so hard to tell.
Like, because Persona 5 is actually probably the worst of the games about that, and like the kanji storyline and the how do you say her name? No, it's not Naruto. That's the character. Who's the the girl detective in Persona 4? Why is her name escaping?
Yeah, I know who you mean. I don't know her name.
That storyline is also kind of doesn't land well.
I only got 30 hours into the 100-hour game, so I don't expect to ever finish Persona 5 because it just started to feel very repetitive. But I will probably play 3 and 4 at some point, especially if 3 gets a remake. I played a bunch of 3 a million years ago. It was so far back, I can't actually remember if I beat it. But I remember the story being intensely excellent.
The story is excellent.
But it was so boring. It was so boring.
I mean, all the Persona games, if you do not enjoy the...
The loop,
you will not enjoy the game.
So my problem was different in each game. 4, I haven't played. But my problem in 3 was I hated Tartarus.
Tartarus sucks.
Like, the problem was Tartarus. It wasn't, like, the gameplay loop itself. At that point, all the, like, again, like, the slice of life stuff was still novel, right? Yeah. There weren't games in American culture that did that really to that point. So like it was all really cool and felt really interesting. Persona 5 gave me too much to do and too little of it felt like it mattered.
Yeah, I could see that.
So like, and I think Persona 5 is a complete damn masterpiece, right? Like I'm not shitting on the game at all. Yeah, I just recognize that like certain things are excellent, but not excellent for me. And Persona 5, I think, like, I don't mind a life sin, but I want, like, 10 things to do. And Persona 5 was, like, at any given time, you can do literally, like, 200 things. Yeah. And it was just, like, it was too much.
I mean, the central problem of all the Persona 3, 4, 5 is you have to play them with a guide. Like, because otherwise, like, you're not going to achieve the goals you want because the game doesn't necessarily like guide you very well towards what you want to. And it's, some of it's like stop gaps are difficult to predict. Like it's like, oh, I want to be friends with Makoto, but you need guts, but it wasn't signaled to me that I would need guts to be friends with her. So I haven't built up guts. So for me to be friends with her, I have to spend a huge chunk of the game building up guts. But that means I'm missing out on all these other set of experiences. It's just a kind of a mess if you don't follow a guide.
Yeah, I dig that.
Same, and 4 is definitely like that.
I mean, so I tend to down... Like, Persona 5, you basically get the best ending by just not, like, screwing up one choice at the end, from what I understand. Whereas Persona 4, like, you need a guide or you just miss it. I traditionally mentally, like, even if I really enjoy the game while I'm playing it with a guide, and I use a guide anyway, right? Mm-hmm. Really downgrade a game in my like feelings for it because of that. I know I don't believe you guys have played Valkyrie Profile, but like Valkyrie Profile is the first
game. Yeah, I have.
Oh, you have?
Okay, it's a great game.
Yeah, except that like it is literally impossible to get the best ending without a guide.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
I mean,
and like that's always made the game significantly worse for me. And even with the freaking guide, you can still screw it up.
Yeah, it's been too long now since I played it to remember the details beyond just it was complex.
Yeah,
but to get that ending, that is
to both Persona. Well, 3 actually is the one that you really can get the bad ending, like unintentionally. 4, it's kind, the game warns you that. Like, you should save, and, like, you could make it, like, if you make, so it's easy to, like, reload if you get the bad ending, and then figure it out. Like, 4, it's kind of intuitive. 3 is not. But I think the big issue for me with Persona 3, 4, and 5, is, like, if you just play the games as emergent experiences, it doesn't really like matter that you don't, you can't be friends with Makoto, or to be friends with Makoto, you have to spend a bunch of time to do X thing, or to be friends with Rise, you have to build your charm, because you'll be missing out on things, but you can just replay it. But as a grown ass person, these games are way too long for me to want to play them multiple times to like see core character moments from the core cast. Like, I cannot imagine playing the entirety of Persona 5 again. Like, it's just so long. It's like so in depth that I want to maximize my experience when I play a Persona game. Then maybe when I was like 20, I probably would have just like played the game and see what happens. I mean, the same is very true with me when I play any of these giant role-playing games that I'm excited about, like Baldur's Gate 1 and Baldur's Gate 2. I just played as emergent experiences. I missed tons of stuff and didn't know what was going on, but I eventually beat the games. I just don't do that anymore because like I want to maximize my time, because I am not playing like a 60-hour RPG unless it is like a true masterpiece, like the Mass Effect games, multiple times in my 30s. Like, it's just not happening.
I will never play. I will be shocked if I ever play a game more than once again. It's just, like, when you're young, it feels like you can play everything you love forever. And now I'm old and I'm gonna die.
That's fair.
Like, that's honestly the concern, right? Like, I'm gonna die, so before I do that, I'd really like to play some more different games rather than just play the same six games over and over again.
Yeah. I think, like, strategy games, like even like Fire Emblem or Triangle Strategy, like, because you can change how you play the maps and, like, mm-hmm. that, like, the strategy experience, I mean, okay. is as much a part of the game. But no, like, as great as the combat is in Persona 5, like, no one's like, oh, I got so much satisfaction out of the strategy I involved to beat a boss in Persona 5. Like,
it's I did beat Triangle Strategy 4 times, like, 2 years ago.
Yes, I know.
But 90% of the map, like, that's not true. About each playthrough had 50% completely new maps. Like, completely new battles. Hmm. That I'd never seen before. So, like, it's why I couldn't do the third playthrough of Three Houses, because, like, the whole first half was just straight up same maps and it got torturous.
Yep.
Okay. Danger Zone.
Yeah.